Holy shit, I am pumped about this. I have one of my man crushes on the podcast, Patrick Hanlon, the author of Primal Branding. If you've been following my content for any period of time, if we've ever worked together, maybe you've seen me speak somewhere, good chance I have referenced Primal Branding by Patrick Hanlon. This is a book that created the first framework for me for creating a brand, and it's what I have used to help other gym owners create their brand. Patrick happened to see video of a keynote I gave last year, 2023, at the Metabolic Franchise Conference, in which I used Primal Branding to frame up why I thought the Metabolic brand was poised for success. And he saw it and he shoots me a DM on LinkedIn. I fucking love social media. He shoots me a DM and he just said, hey man, he said he was really impressed with it. He liked it. So we got connected and I was geeking the whole time. I'm a huge, huge Patrick Hanlon fan. The fact that I got him on the podcast is just, it blows me away. If you're a business owner and you don't own Primal Branding, go buy that book on Amazon immediately and go over also to his website, primalbranding.co. Again, I think Patrick is just, he is just up there in the mindsets of guys that can decode and help bring brands to life. Enjoy the conversation, guys. This was one that I will remember for a very, very long time.
What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. And you may not know this, but I said that on every single podcast for almost 980 episodes, and that's what we would call a ritual. That's essentially, and it's, I have the, what one of the guys I consider the godfather of branding on here. I started making content using your framework and talking about this back in 2015 when I first started doing consulting, and I haven't stopped. I mean, the footage you saw in that keynote I gave at the Metabolic Conference was just this past October. I mean, it is as tried and true. I am super, super excited to have Patrick Hanlon on the podcast today to talk all things branding and hopefully break down what I kind of hope is a pretty comprehensive overview of his primal code that you created. Patrick, thanks for coming on, brother.
Oh, I'm genuinely excited to be here. I mean, anything that starts out with what the fuck is okay by me. The sacred words, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Great lexicon, right? Where could you just frame up for everybody? When did you first, coming up with a framework, I have found very much like the elements of Primal Branding and a lot of the brands I work with, they're like, man, we don't have any lexicon. And then I hang out in the place of business for 6 days. I'm like, are you kidding me? You guys say this thing all the time. And we find it. With the framework for this, was it similar? Were you constantly referencing these things and then finally just sat down one day, put pen to paper, and then created the framework for this? Or how did that come to be?
Well, I mean, what you're saying is true. And I think that it's the intentionality of understanding that these things do exist. I mean, it's just, for most of us, it's just life, right? But the thing, but to answer your question, it was 2001, and I was working in advertising in Madison Avenue or in New York. And I had a problem on an account, and I was thinking about it, and I started to think about what the commonalities, why do we trust companies? Why do we actually believe that the next Coke I buy is going to be as good as the last Coke I bought? Why do I believe that the next Starbucks I get or Red Bull or name a drink, okay? There are 100 of them now. But why do I believe that? And so why do I spend $1,000 for about 4 tires and think they're going to be, you know, last as well? And so so I started to think about all the commonalities. And so this is 2001. And for those of us who can remember 2001, Starbucks had just crossed the nation, you know, with this coffee and charging $3, I think it was, for a cup of coffee, that where you could buy a cup of coffee for 50 cents. So what the fuck was going on with that, right? Then yeah. Google had this goofy name, and they were just sweeping the nation as a search engine as well. But the salient point here is that neither one of them advertised. So there was obviously something going on outside of advertising. And that was always the elephant in the room when we'd have a trying to introduce a new advertising campaign. Someone would go, well, Google isn't advertising. Starbucks isn't advertising. They seem to be doing pretty well. Why should we be spending $30 million on this advertising campaign? Right. And so someone would come up with some bullshit answer. And but at that same time, people acknowledged that there was what they called the Apple cult, you know, and there was this almost tribal sensibility among those who wore Nikes. So the Nike tribe, and everyone acknowledged that that was happening. But again, the advertising didn't play any real role in that. And it wasn't the result of advertising necessarily. There's obviously something else going on. And so I started thinking about, okay, what are all the commonalities? And, you know, everyone had to create something, a story about how they got started. Apple got started in a garage. Starbucks started at Pike Street Market. Google started in a dorm room. Nike started Phil Knight's trunk, the trunk of his car, and other stories. And we were founded in the Garden of Eden, apparently, right? And so then I thought, okay, what else is there? Well, everyone has a logo, right? And so this mark, and so icons, logos are icons. And oh, wait a minute, there are other icons too, sight, sound, taste, smell, touch. It's not just the logo, it's the product design and stuff like that. And then everyone had a tagline, right? And well, just do it, think different, semper fi, e pluribus unum, all these things, you know, these are really creeds. And wait a minute, this is all forming like a religious thing, you know? And my editor at Simon Schuster, Fred Hill, said, don't ever mention religion. but everyone else did. And so now 20 years later, I have. So anyway, I put up together the seven things, the creation story, the creed, the icons, the rituals. Starbucks changed the ritual of how we had coffee in the morning. Google is changing the way that we found information, you know, slowly and surely. And then there's a lexicon, special words that we just pointed out earlier, what the fuck. There's a lexicon, a special group of words that people use, ice grande, skinny, decaf, latte, you know, or hey, we have to upload this, you know, or download this, or click this, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was also a group of people who did not want to be a part of your group, your community. And I have to acknowledge, I guess, or say that I was the first person, I think, that started using the term community in terms of brands and brand community. And I was just telling someone this morning, I stood in front of 900 people, 1,000 people in Vegas and say, you know, your product is not really, or your brand is not really, your brand is not your product. It's not your logo or your website. It's a community. And, you know, 1,000 people staring back at me with, you know, X's in their eyes. But so kind of uncomfortable, awkward. And so, and then finally, so there was non-believer. There were non-believers. People didn't want to be with you. They wanted to be somewhere else. Mac versus PC, Starbucks versus whatever else there is to drink in the morning, Red Bull, Coke, whatever, milk. And then finally, there's a leader, the person who set out against all odds, usually, typically, in order to recreate the world according to their own point of view. And so once you wrap this together, I mean, they're all fascinating in and of themselves individually, and a lot of depth there individually. But when you put them, string them together, you create what we call a strategic brand narrative. It's strategic because each piece of those is a piece of differentiation for you. And each piece, and it's all about brand building the brand, and it's a narrative because of storytelling. And storytelling is how we as human beings learn. And if you think about it, and I have, pretty much every noun that we have has a story behind it. You know, this pen, you know, or a spoon. I mean, they all have a story behind it about how it created and so forth. Go ahead.
So
anyway, it's 2001, and I came up with this and working in my garden in Connecticut. I've told this a lot of times, many times, but I was working in my garden in Connecticut, which gave me a lot of time for reflection, I guess. And then I bounced it off some friends of mine at Apple and not Wells Fargo, but American Express and some other places, people who own companies. And they said, it sounds cool. And I just didn't want to embarrass myself out in the public. And so I got a speaking engagement at the outdoor, out of home group, OOH, and for November. And then came August. Nobody does anything in Manhattan in August. They're all in the Hamptons or somewhere else. And then, so I just waited until September. And then September 11th happened. And nobody cared about a new idea in branding, not much anyway. We were concerned with other things. And so I didn't shelve it, but I put it away with my speeches. I would be called on to do speeches. And then someone said I should write a book about it and that it was different enough and so forth. And so Simon & Schuster luckily picked it up. And so there you go.
Yeah. So I want to talk, there's a...
Sorry for the monologue, people.
Oh, no, that's exactly, I wanted to give the framework. You know, I'm going to do, everyone's already listening to my little intro. I'm going to record, you know, to summarize what you mean to me and where, you know, my story and how I found you and these seven elements of Primal Code. But you said a word there that in the fitness industry specifically is a buzzword. And I want to make sure to give clarity because I know everyone who listens to this podcast heard you say the word community and they all go, oh shit, Stu hates that fucking word. And
oh good, and, let's discuss.
So I want to talk about community is interesting because you said, and I believe it's 100% accurate, you said to those companies, your product or service is not, that's not the brand. The customer base, the community is the brand. And I would even take it one step farther and ask you, is it really the customer base or is it why they are the customer base? Why, you know, so I say this to people like my gym or SoulCycle, Orange Theory, F45 has the best community. And I'm like, listen, community is just human beings, you know, in a brick and mortar location. It's brick, people in the same place. Prisons have community. The KKK has community. Okay. You know, you go to, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. You walk into a bar on NFL game day Sunday, and there is a community there. Mm-hmm. That the people there, Tom, Sally, Bob, and Gina, those are members of the community, but really what's there is the culture. And then I would take the look at the prime elements. Those are all the reasons they are in that space at the same time. That, so the primal brand is what brings them together.
Yeah. And so what I've outlined here in the seven pieces of what we call primal code is we look at brands as belief systems. All right. And so branding is not like molding fog. And if you asked 100 people, what is a brand, you'd get 100 different answers, right? And nowhere else in marketing or in business is that allowed, yeah. Right? Everything has a metric to it. Everything has a process and a right way of doing things. It might be different than someone else's way of doing things, even if you're in the same sector, but there's a process there and it has been fine-tuned to be as efficient and affordable or economically feasible as possible, right? Well, here's this thing, a brand, everyone knows that a brand in whatever guise is worth way more than just a company with assets, right? It's 7 times more, 10 times more, multitudes more. And so if you're in business for yourself, wouldn't you rather build a brand than just a company, an enterprise with assets? Yes, of course. Because when it comes time for your exit, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, or if you're Beats by Dre, 3 years down the road, you want to get a, you know, as much as you can, possibly can. And Beats sold based on the fact that not on because of the headphones, but because they became a brand.
Yeah. Every product is a billion dollars. Commoditized at some point, and then it's just your brand power that positions you higher above the rest of the market.
A company that is doesn't have a brand is a commodity, people say. There you go. And once you hit the commodity stage, you hit a price thing too.
Yeah, it's a race to the bottom or to mediocre at best.
Yeah.
So
Let's so, go. No, I think that's your, I don't know, I know that's your dislike of the word is accurate. The grouping of people, you collect, you build a belief system that attracts other people who share your beliefs, and that becomes what? A group, a team, a community. Yeah. Depends what sector you're in, I think. Yeah.
And that term community, I always preface it culture. Culture creates a community. And that culture comes from the elements and the things you value in your brand. On the inside of a business, we might call
the belief system. The belief system.
The core values, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The belief system builds the culture. Yeah. Because how you, we, you know, remember the last time you started a new job, right? You learned all the things, the way they act. Hey, where did this, before you even joined, you went, where's this place from? Who, what are these people about? You know, how do they, then you learn, get inside, you go, how do they do things? And what are the words? You know, is it the bathroom, the toilet? You know, what is it, right? And so where is it? And so you learn all these things, and you're learning all the jokes and the anecdotes that everyone else knows that are laughing about, because you're trying to fit in. You're trying to be a member of that culture and fit into that culture. And so so these are all formed by these seven pieces of code.
Yeah. So let's go through those. Let's go ahead. And I'd love for you to, you know, just give an operational definition. We'll go through them top to bottom, and then give us some examples of the, you know, of brands or examples that you like. And then what would you say are some of the biggest misses? So for example, number one is the creation story, which is the easiest one, because everyone has a history as to how we got here. Some people aren't the best at storytelling, and like, oh, this is kind of boring. Me and my buddy just started tinkering with computers in my garage. I'm like, well, no, Wozniak and Jobs is actually a very interesting story, you know, when you tell it right. So talk to me about creation story.
Yeah, telling it right is the thing, I think. And I think it's it depends on who you are, where you are, and where you want to go. So let's back up a minute, because we want to set up the, what's your vision? First of all, where do you want to be? And so we always ask people to imagine that you are a journalist, pick whatever you want, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, whatever. And what's the headline? And imagine it's, what, 2030, let's say, okay. And then, so it's in the distance. And what is your headline? And what are a couple of sentences that back up that, that support that headline? And so doing that gives you some sense of, most people, especially people who have their own companies or businesses, especially in your category, every day their hair's on fire. Something happened, right? Someone's not coming in, can't make it. A client is not coming in today, and blah, blah, blah. So everything's, what the fuck is aptly named. And so I'll keep coming back to that. And so determining where you start that story, it might start at birth, if that's relevant, I always ask people, where were you born? Because that's at least a starting point. And it really matters, because again, go back to Vegas and 1,000 people in the room. And I picked out a woman who was sitting, unfortunately for her, was sitting in one of the front three rows. And I asked her to stand up. And what's your name? You know, Rachel. Rachel, where were you born? San Diego. Where'd you go to high school? Did you go to college? Which one? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And probably get called on the carpet for that these days. But the but anyway, we all felt much better about, point is we feel much better about Rachel now than anyone else in the room, just based on that one piece of code. And so does the creation story matter? Yeah, it does. And so then, go ahead.
Well, no, I always, in these conversations too, I reflect and say back, I'm like, most small business owners, as the entrepreneur, you set out to solve the problem that I'm assuming your company solves for other people. So your story eventually leads, it's very Shakespearean, act one, character introduction, act two, conflict, act three, resolution, i.e. your company. So in your creation story, we get to the point here where you experience, I was looking, you know, Soul Cycle. I was looking for an inward focused, very zen indoor spinning class, when the entire spinning class scene, thanks to Johnny G, was road cycling based. It was for road cyclists, and that was the only people who took spinning classes back in the day. Enter Soul Cycle, and now you have, you know, you're talking top executives in Manhattan and New York City taking $36 per class rates, which were unheard of, and you know, they had lit candles, And there was mantras that were said and and all that kind of hippy dippy shit, but it worked. It worked perfectly, but that was the problem they set out to solve. And at least that's where I've always found myself, because I find founders have a hard time giving me their creation story, which should probably be the easier part, in my opinion.
It's you can always think of it as a hero's journey, the hero's journey too, you know, archetypally or whatever. The where you leave and you are setting out on a quest and a mission, and you encounter certain friction points, whether they're dragons or behemoths or whatever, or the weather, whatever it is, and you overcome those, or the checks don't come in, and you overcome those obstacles, and that becomes, you know, your creation story ultimately. Yeah, but it's foundational, and it's, I mean, it's out in the streets. It's where'd you get that bag? I love your bag. Love your shoes. Yeah. Where'd you get that?
A website.
Shirt?
It's about page. It's the about page of a website.
Exactly. Well, and that's important, because then you determine, where does that go? Does that become go on the website, or does it go on the bag? Does it go on where are my Warby Parkers?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, here. Yeah. Here inside my Warby Parkers is their creation story on the cloth, right? Facebook did a whole movie about The Social Network, which was about their creation story, right? And Google saw that and went, hey, Facebook has a movie, why can't we have a movie? And so they did The Internship, which was about their creed and who's good enough to work at Google, or what are the right people to work at Google?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you see, you know, on that same one? I'll have, you know, and a creation story goes on an about page. And I also tell an owner, you also need to have a one sentence version of that as well, for when you're wearing your, you know, Joe's Gym sweatshirt to the coffee shop. And someone goes, oh, hey, is that a gym near here? Is that yours? Oh, how did you start that? Don't give them a fucking 3-paragraph about page from your website. You got to have like this longer format version, right? And then you also need this express one that lets someone know, you know, the first time I ever had to give a bio to a speaking event I was speaking at. And I'm like, oh shit, I got to condense this bio to about 3 sentences. And it's, you know, it's a lot to filter down, but it's, you know, practicing that creation story in long format and short format, I think is, it's important.
Yeah, it is. And we also think it's important. What you're talking about is the creed also.
Yeah.
You know, why do you exist? You know, and it's, well, for us, it's brands or belief systems, you know.
Let's talk about the creed. Is that big? So for you as the creed, I always view that there's internal and external, and I'd love for your feedback on this. I've pitched it to internal is more or less the core values, essentially, as to what we're doing. It's why does the business exist? You know, what do we believe in? And then external, at least in the fitness world, you know, some gyms, you know, they have like kind of like the 10 commandments as you walk into the studio, and it's like no using the cell phone. They're things that are generally going to fuck up the client experience for other customers. Just please don't. Right. Our kind of people don't do things like this, and we're going to publicly put it out there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's a internal group of people, internal team, and then there's an external group who are your customers or clients or whatever you call them, and partners. And so the, and there's two sets of code, kind of, you know, it depends. And so that's where the judgment comes in about, you know, which part of the story do we want to tell, which part of the story is right for them, and so forth. And so in order to keep your people motivated and so forth, first of all, building a culture obviously is huge because people want jobs that give them purpose and give them meaning. And this whole thing is about moving from something that's meaningless to meaningful. And so it's, I'm sure you've heard the Rock story, right?
Maybe.
So where's a rock? Where's my damn rock? So let's imagine this is a rock and meaningless, right? But if I told you this rock was from Mars, it'd suddenly take on meaning. If I told you this rock, this is the rock that killed Goliath, you know, that David used to kill Goliath, suddenly he has meaning, right? I mean, the whole collectibles categories built upon provenance and the creation story and where to come from.
Right? Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's interesting with the creed. You told, I believe it was you, you referenced the Estee Lauder story for creation stories in the book. Is that correct? Yeah.
I referenced it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those people not familiar, essentially Estee Lauder, the perfume company, she's going around to department stores trying to pitch her thing, and nobody's paying attention. She leaves one after getting rejected again, crying, spills it all over the floor. It breaks whatever it is. Next time she's in a department store, people are raving about that scent that was in the carpet of hers, right? It was something to that degree, I believe. I'm sure I butchered it.
Oh, yeah. It's even worse. she was living with Charles, her son, who was, you know, 6 or 7 years old or whatever at the time. And they were poverty-stricken, impoverished in Paris, in part of Paris. And because she did not come from the group of people that they usually bought perfumes from, the guy at the buyer at the department store kind of shooed her off, and she spilled, either intentionally or not, her perfume in the perfume department. And all the women in Paris that came into the department store were just begging for this perfume. So the buyer had to call her back in, and that was the start.
Yeah. But it's amazing. Yeah. Hey, do you have any, off the top of your head, any creation stories that, like, when you then look at their creed, lends itself, like, you can see how the dots start connecting from, like, oh, you know, like an Estee Lauder, like, you know, because of that, you know, if Estee Lauder's creed is, you know, everybody gets a shot or something, like something to that degree, where the dots start connecting. Do you have any examples that you think of that where they've connected?
Well, I mean, it's the for one that leaps to mind is the obvious one, because I'm an Apple person, is, you know, putting a ding in the universe. And the it's a question of, you know, how much of a ding, you know, the current regime is doing. But the I think that there are even more examples, I think, of people who started out and then had to pivot, you know. And but I think that, let me think. I think that Patagonia is another example that people point to that I like, and they just started out making spikes, you know, that people could bang into the side of a mountain, and they had to make sure, they're forging spikes, and they had to make sure that they stuck, you know, and were durable and didn't break off up there. And so that, both their sense of quality and their sense of durability and a respect for the planet, you know, falls out of that, I think. North Face also.
Talk to me about North Face.
It's a company that falls out of Patagonia, by the way. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Walk me through, let's talk now, let's shift over to icons. And generally, this is where everyone thinks of a mark or a logo type scenario. But icons can also, I mean, they can be audible, right? My favorite one, you know, da-na-na, da-na-na, like every guy knows that SportsCenter is on, right? Like when we hear that. Talk a little bit about the icons, and where do you see, especially in the small business sector, mistakes being made in maybe putting too much emphasis or thought initially behind that? Like, Google is not a good business name if they fail or if they're mediocre. Yeah. Right. Like the quality of the business dictates whether the icon, you know, and the mark or the name of the company means anything. Yeah. Some businesses have ridiculously horrible business names by all standards, but they're the best in their category.
Well, yeah, there was a flurry after Google of people naming things, you know, bullshit names, right? You know, Yelp and so forth, you know, which is a phase. I mean, now people are pulling the vowels out, right? Most recently, and doing other things. And so, but back to icons, though, the thing that we have to remember is that icons engage all the senses. Icons are incredible, are fascinating to me, because icons go directly to our brains. Our senses go directly to our brains to tell us if we're safe or not. And so, you know, even in music, you'll find strange or unusual sounds, sirens and so forth, that pop up. And acquaintance of mine, friend of mine, is a music producer. And he was on the phone and in the middle of people coming over and saying hello to him and all that kind of stuff. We finally got out of this restaurant. And but he was on phone call. He was on the phone constantly. And I overheard him saying, you know, we're trying to find the right sound. And how long will that take? The person there and was saying he's about 3 months. And, you know, because that's what music is all about. And so the thing is that our brain is trying to keep us safe. Our sensory things come in and smoke, you know, sounds. Apparently we're born with two fears, the fear of falling and loud noises. Everything else is learned. And so when you think about that, the, you know, the sense of smell, sense of taste, all of those things interact. And so when you come into a gym, you might think you're just, you know, selling drinks or something like that, but how well they taste becomes important. It could become a point of differentiation. I work out here. I mean, we stop at a gym because my wife likes the shakes that they make better than wherever else that you can get them. And so the health drink thing. And so so you have to just investigate, you know, taste, the sound, you know, what kind of sounds do people experience when they walk in? You know, is it music or is it weights clanging? You know, what kind of smells, you know, or scents? I should probably say scents, you know, based off of Estee Lauder. And how do these things impact your clients coming in? And they're all points of differentiation. And so the scent that they smell could be, hotels devise their own scents and have companies come in and create a scent just for them, right? And so initially that was just being done by Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, 15, 20 years ago, right? And Now everyone's doing it. So you should do it too. So all these, and that's important to think, I think, to point to make, because all of these seven things, and here we have five senses thrown in there as well, and one of them, just one of them, but all these things are points of differentiation that can help you stand out. And it couldn't be just one thing that influences one person, but what we're trying to do is to get that one person to talk about you, right? And in our culture, people need to hear about you five different times before they are even aware that you exist, before they can go, yeah, I think I've heard of them. And so what we want is lots of people talking about it, advocates talking about us, word of mouth, which is the strongest form of advertising.
I'll do a lot of concept validation consulting where someone has an idea. It's just a concept on the back of a napkin. And we sit down and really analyze it over the course of months to find out whether we should take this to market. And I always use, and I go back to the icons. When you're analyzing a market, you know, segment, you're looking at the current, you know, the top performing competitors in the area. I always break down the seven elements in my analysis, and then one of them being icons. So for example, back in the day, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Venice Beach, Gold's Gym, and we had that entire surge where bodybuilding and Gold's Gym and lifting weights and the spaghetti strap tank top was a thing. It was a really big thing.
Hardcore.
Yeah, exactly. But then you look at, you know, a la maybe like Seth Godin, like the concept of the purple cow. And I only say purple cow because it leads its way to Planet Fitness, right? Which is the judgment-free zone. If you walked into any Gold's Gym or typical health club back in the day, you know, you hear some weights banging and all this other stuff and guys grunting and this thing. Grunting, and then you go to Planet Fitness, the antithesis.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, when people are singing, you zag.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be my question for you. I would ask is, because an icon, based on the definition you have, it's a quick concentration of meaning that causes your brand identity and brand value to spontaneously resonate in their brain. Whether, you know, if somebody dresses up for Halloween and they have any assortment of white and black makeup on their face, I think of Kiss. right? Like that's
sure.
like if I see any version of that, I instantly think of Kiss, because that was so, that concentration was ingrained in my brain, is that's what those guys did. How much is too much? I mean, I'll walk into a new facility, I get, you know, brought out somewhere, and I mean, we're talking, I mean, it, the logo and the thing is, I mean, it's it like someone threw up all over the gym with it. To a degree, it's like, we're at a 10, maybe we dial it down to an 8 or come up with other ways, because I think people get too caught, like, oh, my logo just has to be everywhere. And very similar to what you were talking about, tap into the other senses.
Yeah, and so I thought that slide that you shared with people in your video last week was, last couple months ago, where they were all electric blue lights or electric red lights, pink lights, or whatever that was. Yeah, that was a great slide, because it would just showed, you know, the ubiquity of what used to be a good idea.
100%.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of imitation.
And with marks, that's generally, and I personally, and I would love your opinion on this, I'm just a stickler for words. I think they're important. A lot of companies say, like, we rebranded. I've always probably more aligned myself with the term, like, repositioning. Like, again, I'll go back, like, the Starbucks logo. And you talked about this in the book, right? You go to that first variation. You know, it's a mermaid with her tits out, and it's this archaic looking thing. And then you fast forward to, it looks more like Lululemon's Mew, like the female silhouette, you know, the long hair, the whole thing. That's like this evolution, this in modernizing. I always told people, and this is definitely not PC today, but rebranding, in my opinion, is generally when I take a company and we're having to do an overhaul in the fitness industry of pretty much who they are. So it'd be like, hi, I'm Stuart. And then I rebranded, and I'm like, I'm Cheryl, and I don't like working it. Like, it's a different thing. We're like repositioning is we're still selling this service. We've made some changes. Our logo used to look like this. I've repositioned it to a 2024 angle. And, but essentially we're just kind of coming up with the ages, or maybe with the new regime, if there's a new leader or whatever it may be. How do you think of rebranding versus like repositioning out there? Or is that just getting into some silly, you know, jargon and semantics that I'm just kind of got my head wrapped around?
It's no, it's somewhat valid. and the thing is that you have to know where the entity is coming from, where they are now, and then where they want to get to. I mean, if they're stuck in the 2000s, you know, it was the last time they did anything was 20 years ago. That's going to be a total revisioning, if you will, right? Whereas Starbucks, just to be using an easy example, is constantly iterating something, changing the size of the cup, because it's a daily ritual for a lot of people, right? And so they change the size of the cup, and you don't really feel it, except you do feel it. Your brain feels it, you know, and it senses that something's different. And the logo starts to evolve, let's say. And so that depends, that whole thing, whether you're repositioning, revisioning totally, that would be a total revision if it was, you're walking into a 20-year-old place, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I assume, so what, I have a question for you. Within your sector, what is the usual distance that people come in? Is it 2 miles or 5 miles or 10 miles?
If we've got an urban metropolitan tier one or tier two market, you know, major city type scenario, you're generally at the most, you're probably looking at a 2 mile radius in an urban center. Once we get out to the burbs, we're looking 3 to 5 rural, 10 plus, something like that.
Yeah. So what you have to do then is really figure out within that 3 to 5 mile radius, you know, what's everyone else doing, because you want to differentiate yourself from them. But I know people are parts of, you know, franchises a lot of times, and you have those set of rules or guidelines to go get through and work with, and work with, not get through, hopefully. And then, and so You have to weigh all of that and figure out how do you differentiate yourself. And sometimes God is in the details, you know? I mean, is your place clean?
Number one. Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely.
Does it smell like when you walk in? What's the overall ambience? And I was, you know, when I was thinking about our session today, I was thinking about WeWork, you know? And I don't know how many people have been in WeWorks, but they were sort of the replacement for the office. And they were part hotel and part gym and part office. You know, and you walked in one, and in terms of decor and not overdoing it, they did a really nice job. And Airbnb is tries to do the same thing, is when you walk into an Airbnb or a WeWork or someplace, you get a different but similar experience every time. Yeah. Right. But it was very, I would say, high level, high income. Yeah.
It's one of your quotes in the book is in regards to icons. And this is where, like, again, if I get on that concept call and someone wants to send me like, hey, I got mock-ups from the graphic designer on the icon, on the logo. I'm like, I don't want to fucking see it. I don't care. Cause and I use your quote. It's not enough to have a flag. You must have a nation willing to follow it. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what the logo is. I care. Do I think these other six elements will be interesting enough to where somebody mm-hmm. would drop the flag they were holding prior and pick yours up? Or someone who's never picked up a flag, who's never walked at a gym before, why would they then pick your flag up? And that's not contained to just one element of the Primal Code. You got to come correct with all of them.
It's more about, remember, brands are belief systems. Belief systems attract people who share your beliefs. So it's more about, I would say, are these my people?
Yeah.
Right.
Let's kick over to rituals. So, you know, it's so funny. I joke around about my fiance's friend. She's having a daughter. And I kid you not, I don't know why anybody would do this to a kid in 2024. They're naming this kid Alexa. Uh-huh. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's my ritual when I walk into my home. I say, hey, Alexa, turn on my lights, do this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's so fucked up. But a ritual, would you go ahead and give everyone kind of the overview as to what a ritual is? And then where can they, if they don't, like I said earlier in this podcast, I believe everybody already has the rituals. They just haven't been thoughtful enough to stop and notice them.
Yeah, I think that that's true. The rituals, I mean, another word for ritual is process. Another word might be habit, you know, if it's ingrained well enough. And rituals are really repeated, hopefully positive interactions that we have with people, with places, with things. And we want to have as many positive experiences as possible. We want to remove all the friction, as many friction points as we can. And from that experience, and I always say, if you want a good ritual, get a hug. If you want a negative one, call your bank. Actually, what I say is call Comcast. Yeah, and in 20 years, Comcast still holds. And so they just don't get it. But anyway, so rituals can be small things, like where you park your car. I mean, we all have rituals every day, you know, from the moment we get up and what side of the bed you get on to get out of, you know, and land on. And so so our task then is to define a set of rituals, an ideal set, I suppose, rituals, a set of rituals that people can engage in as they come into our facility, you know, or even before they get into the facility, you know, and what can we make great? And sometimes those are just little tweaks, but like making sure the place is clean, you know? And so that first impression when you walk in, what is that, right? And we get this all the time when you are stuck going to the mall or someplace with a friend and they go and they walk in, oh, I have to go in here real quick. And you walk in, and you immediately want to get out, turn around, spin around, and walk back out.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Yep. Doesn't it happen? Or a bar or something, like anything. And you immediately want to leave, and your senses are going crazy. And you can't get out of there fast enough. Well, that's a bad experience, right? And it's a bad, could be a bad, you know, in a sense, it's a bad relationship. And what we want to do is build positive experiences that people go in and they want to spend some time there. And we want to create a relationship, not a transaction. And that's what all this, I think, is getting to, is how do you create these, orchestrate or design these seven pieces of code so that we're creating positive rituals, positive, likable, extremely likable relationship, and not a transaction. You know, it's January, right? And what was the ritual of people in January? They, you know, their New Year's resolutions and gym, everyone's at the gym. And so the, for the next month or two or more, hopefully. And so the thing that you want to do is, how can you create rituals that people come help, you know, keep them coming in, and simple things, handing them a bucket of water or whatever it is. So
the gentleman who founded the concept of CrossFit, his name was Greg Glassman, and a very intelligent gentleman, but, and you know, with no formal training on branding whatsoever, he had a saying that he believed to create a runaway brand, you had to first be endearing to your customer base. But then step two, it had to be enduring. And one of the things you talk about in the book is that these rituals, they're not, it's, you can't just have a ritual, but it has to be happening consistently. His third one is, once you've been endearing, you've done it enduringly, it can then be defining, meaning people would define their, who they are by their association with you. I'm a CrossFitter. That's a noun, right? Or I verb it. I Uber to work, right? I, you know, kind of thing. It's interesting. I was, have you ever been inside of a Moe's Southwest Grill? It's like a knockoff Chipotle kind of thing. It's a burrito joint. It was super interesting. So the Moe's Southwest Grill, and it's a franchise. It is policy. Mainly on the Southeast and then the South, and then throughout the South and Southwest. It's just a burrito joint. And when you walk in the door, all the cooks, like, behind, like, you've been to, like, a Chipotle, like, it's an open kitchen concept, and everyone yells as soon as, because the door has a bell or whatever on it. But when the door opens, everyone in the kitchen staff, everyone in the wait staff yells, "Welcome to Moe's." And awesome. I was there, and there was a gentleman in a, like, in a, you know, he wasn't eating. He had a suit on, he had a tie, he looked professional, and he was taking notes. And I bet you he's from corporate, or he's someone on the franchise side doing quality control. And I sat down and we talked to him, and I asked him, I said, you work for Moe's? He goes, yeah. And I didn't see what he was scribbling. And I asked him, I said, how do you judge the efficiency or proficiency of that greeting? And he's like, well, they got to do it every time. And I said, was that it? He goes, well, yeah, we just want them to be enthusiastic about it. I'm like, if it were, like, my brain was going, like, I would have a decibel meter, and I'd be making sure we were hitting a certain decibel every time to ensure the consistency of it. Cause by the thousandth door opening that day, it's welcome to Moe's. Like, you're just, you're just so out of it. But the consistency of that ritual makes it. And you know what's funny? If you've ever gone and eaten at Moe's enough, and anyone listening to this, the people in line, cause the line can be long for lunch. You're right. You could be in line for 15 minutes. I guarantee you, by the fourth, fifth, seventh, 12th time that door opens, you almost are saying it with them just from standing there and hearing it. It's very Pavlovian.
You're waiting for it. You're waiting for it to come.
Exactly. If we move on to pagans, which is my favorite, one of my favorite elements, I'm a big 5149 guy. I feel if you're going to write a book, if you're going to make videos, content on social media, if you make something you think everyone's going to love, I just don't see it making that many ripples, especially in today's social media where everyone's creating content kind of age. I generally believe, like, if you have something to say, 51% will either agree or disagree with it, and the remain in the other side. So it kind of just splits the aisle. And I think that's a good, like, when you're proofreading content in your head before publishing, that's kind of a good litmus test. Will this be impactful to people? Cause it's impactful for those who disagree as well. Talk to everyone about the pagans and the haters of a brand and why they're important.
I think that, first of all, it crosses the line for what it traditionally in marketing, for traditional marketers, you know, and I've been around for 1,000 years, so I've met a few of them. And we think that our product or our service or whatever we're doing is so terrific that of course everyone wants to do it. The only thing that's holding them back is they're not aware of them, but not aware of us. And so we push the awareness button, which means do more advertising traditionally, right? Okay. So, but the fallacy there is that of course there are people, I mean, we know common sense says there are people that are not going to want to be with us. For everyone who likes Apple, there are, you know, people with Samsung phones or whatever, Galaxies. And so, but I came out of, you know, the burger wars, the cola wars, the imports versus, native, you know, American made cars, and all of this, you know, so I thought that, we just need to bang our heads, you know, against something, the pagan, the other. Plus, I grew up in the Cold War. So, but so the hiding under the desks and stuff. So anyway, there was always this sense of conflict. And so the, what I realized now, having worked with this format construct, is that the pagans understanding what you're not and don't want to become is not only incredibly valuable for you, but having a place to plant that flag that you mentioned earlier is crucial, because people want to know what you're about, and there's no better way of expressing that than saying what you're not a lot of times.
Do you feel that by a brand embracing and acknowledging, again, like everyone talks about who their ideal avatar customer is, it's just as important then to, you know, if you have your muse here, this is who I'm targeting, you've got to have your antagonist to that. Because I feel when you really identify that and you draw that line in the sand and you create product, services, messaging, marketing, whatever, that speaks to just that 51 or that 49%, whatever it is, that group feels like you're taking up for that cause. If you, again, if you angle it appropriately and you do it right.
Yeah. Well, you pointed it out earlier with Gold's Gym and Planet Fitness. Planet Fitness people are, I don't know if it's the 49% or the 51%, but yeah, they're the flip side, right? And so if everyone's zigging, you zag. And so the, when people have iterated so many times that they're stuck, we use this as a way of helping to point out, well, you're getting to where they need to be. You know, would you do this? No, that's not us. Would you, how about this? No, this? Maybe. So, okay, maybe then, you know, I'd start pushing in that direction. And so this helps in terms of training too, because if people can't do a certain thing, well, move them over one way or the other. So really in effect, and of course, I guess we should point out that in today's world, a lot of people just deliberately select the contrarian position.
Sure.
In life.
Be polarizing.
Yes, be polarizing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In Small Business America, it's interesting. I had a gym and they were in a college town in Boston near very affluent universities. And their core demographic was a broke college student, an undergrad. Mm-hmm. And the business was broke and poor because the college grads couldn't afford it. And they were gone 4 months out of the year for holiday, you know, for Christmas, spring break, summer break, whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So we just switched it around. We said, like, well, what is it you want? And then who in this market would better serve it? So we 3x the price. And guess what? The college kids left, and all the professors that made good wages at these nice universities and lived in the area, nice brownstones and things like that, yeah, they joined. And it was a huge, you know, that would have maybe been a rebranding I would have considered. And we repositioned the whole, everything from the equipment that was in the facility to the services that were offered, the price point, and then who we catered to. So our avatar, our muse, became our pagan, and our pagans became the opposite. We couldn't get teachers to join this gym prior because they don't want the college students, you know, they don't want to get caught on Instagram, some college kid taking a video of a teacher doing a deadlift, like that kind of thing.
That's just smart marketing. That's not branding. That's just smart marketing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that the, it's important to build relationships, not transactions. So that transaction with the college kid was just faulty.
Sure.
Right. We have a lot of college students, but they don't have the money or the time, probably.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the people who shop at West Elm versus people who shop at Walmart, right? It's I mean they're different categories of humans, right? They could find conflict with each other on different things. It's drawing the line in the sand and choosing who you want to serve. I think it's hard in the beginning because everyone's like, well, everyone's money spends, but your reputation of who you take money from follows you for forever.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's West Elm versus
Walmart. Let's go to Sacred Words and Lexicon and talk to me, you know, let everyone know, obviously, you know, the operational definition of it, most people probably get, but what are some, when do you ever find companies try too hard to make up their own words and things like that? And it just comes off as disingenuous.
And they try to create it themselves. And it is disingenuous, I think. And it's best when people make, when your customers make it up, because the customers are your group. And when they make it up, it's authentic, right? Yes. And it's probably better. And so otherwise it's becomes a little bit like camp. And so I think that, however, I think that it, I mean, your category, your sector is filled with specialized lexicons, right? From spin to Gold's Gym, you know.
Names of exercises.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bicycle.
It's interesting. We, you know, to that same tune of talking to founders who don't think they have lexicon, I don't have sacred words. I used to, when I first started off, I started off with my pickup truck in a park doing a 6 a.m. and a 6 p.m. boot camp with like $500 of Craigslist equipment. And before ever the start of the workout, I always said just nonchalantly.
Just look at that, what you just said. That was filled with lexicon.
I would always say before the workout, all right, guys, 3, 2, 1, work hard, have fun. Yeah. And I just said work hard. I don't know. That's just because that's what I intentionally meant. And it wasn't until I read your book and I started really auditing everything I did and said, and I tell this to any small business owner, what are your isms? If I talk to your customers and your staff and I said, hey, do an impersonation of Stu or Patrick, what are his isms? What would he say?
Isms. Yeah.
Yeah. What are their isms? That's probably a good starting point for your lexicon.
Yeah. And you're not even aware that you're doing it, probably. I mean, it's just a part, whatever you learned, but you're passing it on. Yeah. And we come up with them and they're best if they're organic but they're a great point of differentiation. You know, I mean, on the grand scale of things, you know, a doctor learns, you know, all their terms of art, lawyers learn their terms of art. If you're in computer programming, you have to learn a whole new language, et cetera, et cetera. And so how well you know the words defines, you know, where you stand within that category. You know, if you have a PhD, I mean, you're, you know, it's better than being an undergrad, et cetera. And so the words, all these things, again, are points of differentiation, and the words that you use, especially in this category. I mean, no understanding what those weights are called or whatever whatever it is, how you're working out, which muscles you're working on.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone has different, you know, different jargon for muscle groups and things like that.
Yeah.
I use yours. Like I use when I'm giving this example, I vary in a metaphor. I say, you know, Patrick Hanlon did not invent the term pagans. But I never for one second, as it relates to branding or anything, ever thought of the term pagan. That never entered my brain to ever even associate that word with this framework or with this problem or with this paradigm until I heard him use it. So sometimes we don't even like people racking their brains trying to think of a new word. Don't do that. That shit's hard. You know, plenty of words already exist. Just bring it into a conversation in which that word normally does not see any light.
Yeah, it's unnecessary to make them up because people will make them up for you, unless you're selling a new product, which comes with its own, you know, architecture and so forth. So people want, again, as I said earlier, people want to learn the words when they come in, because what's important to you guys as owners, operators, is that you want your customers to understand what the words are. So you want to bring them in and help them understand those new words if they're being onboarded and new customers, new clients. Help them out with the words. This means that, you know, what we're referring to here, there, blah, blah, blah.
So I'm old enough to remember the early internet days, and the word cyber was a big thing. In the past, that you don't hear the word cyber anymore. You sound like an old person, right? But look what Elon did. And, you know, with the cyber truck. And I don't know if you saw this. I just got an email today. Elon Musk now submitted a patent several days ago for a piece of fitness equipment called the Cyber Hammer.
Cool. It's,
because I don't know if you saw when he did that Cybertruck demonstration. He had the person with demonstrate hit the car repeatedly with a big hammer, a huge sledgehammer.
I did not see that.
If anyone listening, Google Elon Musk Cyber Hammer. It's a piece of fitness equipment that he is just passed the patent on, and
that's
he's
awesome.
his cyber lexicon, which was just the word we left back there. We never picked it back up. We never even thought to go back to cyber. It was left off in early days of Web 2.0. No one's
I'm looking at Twitter,
it.
Everyone. Anyway, I can. It's not there. I can't see it yet. But I'm going to take a look at that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then the leader, the last element of Primal Code. It's got to come back to the leader. How does that? Talk about that a little and how that impacts for maybe a business owner who. Especially in the small business world, we wear all the hats. And if we're successful, we can start paying people to take these hats off. But as a leader is trying to not be everything to everybody in the company anymore, how does that element change for a leader who's trying to take a couple steps back and empower a CEO or CFO or whatever it may be?
Well, that's a great point. Everyone is going to want to know who was the leader, you know, and it depends on, you know, what the name of the firm is and all that kind of thing. But I think that it's not so much who it used to be, but who it is now. And so you also have managers, and those people are the people who lead that team inside of that location, right? And so they are the leader, and it's essential that people understand that that's what that person is. And so those people are really responsible for bringing the rest of the pieces of code together at that location, say. And on the corporate level, it's Elon Musk, right?
Yeah.
And so it's the visionary who brought all this together and had this idea and is making it work and making it viable. And, you know, the leader's primary job thing is to give everyone jobs, right? And make it all work. So it's their role to bring all the seven pieces of code together and making sure that that narrative exists. Because again, they want the enterprise to not only be successful, but to become a brand and worth have value. So every time you create the pieces of code, bring it together, keep that narrative going out in all the media, because remember, people need to hear about you in five different places before they even know that you exist. And then once they know that you exist, you don't want to be boring. So you have to keep those pieces. So each piece of code becomes a piece of content, you know, right? So the CMO, former CMO of Twitter, that other company, he told me he had the seven pieces of code on his wall. And Zeke told me, I would just look at the wall and go, okay, we talked about icons last time. Let's talk about the creed this week and get back to the 36 other things he had to do that day. Right. And so it's as easy as that. Can be as easy as that. But what you want to do is keep, depending on the number of people who is your audience, you want to keep them informed about what you're all about and your pieces of differentiation. And you want to have hopefully great content that keeps people excited about that. The days of getting the thing going viral are pretty much over. And even if you get something that's viral, it only lasts for a couple of days until the next viral thing comes along, until Elon comes along with his cyber hammer.
Yeah,
and so the leader, back to the main point, is the leader is responsible for keeping all of that going. Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, when I think about the leader, and obviously a leader in company, you know, any company is going to sustain a long tenure that's going to transcend, and there, you know, that's going to change. And in most small businesses, that original small business owner is always forever going to be the leader. And I always try to say, I just try to be like, okay, so we've got our piece here on the leader, but who's the person that, not that you necessarily have to pass the torch to, but that you put the spotlight on at some point as well, because, you know, you're a gym owner and you're going on year 12 and you've had a general manager with you for 6 out of those 12 years, you know, it's probably time to maybe, you know, go to your, you know, I have everyone keep a shared Google Doc or every page as we have our notes on each element of the Primal Code and update that a little bit. What has this person brought to the table? What have they added to any of these other elements?
A lot of times we point to leaders within our organization, you know, who's the best instructor, so they become leader of the day kind of thing, right? And so so we do that, you know, ritualistically within good organizations. So that keeps everyone trying to achieve more and keep them pumped up, keep them motivated. And so hopefully we're all leaders. Right. And actually, with that in mind, our people also are brands. Right. And someone might want to work out with Heather as their guide or whatever. I mean, it depends on the organization and what kind of teams you have. But so if you have a personal trainer, they have their own brand also. Right. As Peloton has demonstrated.
Yeah, that's and I'll have to have you back because obviously I know you released Social Code recently, the book. And sure. That's something we'll have to talk maybe on another podcast, but a lot of gyms in which in today's age of social media, gym has 2 or 3 coaches that have developed their own brand. And how does a brand of someone's live with inside your brand if there's not alignment there? She might be a great coach and she has this big following, but if her thing doesn't align within yours, is that going to be future tense catastrophic for the business to harbor that and keep that in house as you have these
potentially,
you know,
absolutely.
It's interesting.
Well, it's like having a movie. Who's the star?
Yes.
And then there's always a battle at the top, right? For top billing, who gets top billing that? And so the organizations are fun.
Patrick, what are you working on these days? If somebody is, you know, they want to learn more about the work you put out and all that, what's the best way for me to get in contact with you? Just wrap up with that.
Thank you. Yes, I would go to Instagram, where we try to post, you know, a couple times a week anyway. And if anyone's on Medium, we're on Medium. But Instagram is really the place where we put little quick things that you can hit on it every day or whatever. And it's at Primal Branding, so it's easy. And we're around. We're constantly working on things that are important to the world and to people at large. And so, but we can't talk about them. We don't talk about them. Especially while they're in process.
This has been great. You've been
look at their website, primalbranding.co. There you go.
Primalbranding.co. I'll have that down in the show notes. Your work has been incredibly important, insightful for me. There's a million frameworks on branding. This is the one that I feel punched the hardest for me and then allowed me to wrap it around for my business and then, you know, others that I work with. I strongly encourage anybody, if Primal Branding, it's the one book I go back to. I have a handful, not many, that I go back to at least every 12 to 18 months. And I mean, I've got the dog-eared pages and highlights and my notes and all that. And it's I'm still a fan of an actual physical book. I have not converted to like Kindle yet, but Patrick, I appreciate it. thank you very much for everything you've done and all the work you put out there. This is a very surreal moment for me. I was very excited about this.
Oh, I was too. I mean, I was amazed to watch your speech. Because I hear about them all you know, out in the universe, but I don't know how my attention was called to it, but I'm glad it was. And no, it's been fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great, brother, it's a great category, of course, you know, and it's where it's a category where people are moving in and out all the time. It's very dynamic to me. Yeah.
That it is. Keeps me busy. Yeah. All right, Patrick, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Stuart.